From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Andrew Richards.
I'm Melanie Stevens.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. So last time we talked about what generation objects are in. Yeah. Tell us what we're going to talk about this week.
So we're going to continue that story and ask, why haven't things been cleaned up, right? So they're in a generation, but sometimes you think they should be gone. You freed the memory and it's still there. And we're going to go about working out why they're still in a generation and why they're...
Okay, and we have our special guest with us again this week. So do you want to tell us again who you are and what part of Microsoft you're from?
Sure. I'm Melanie, and I work on the Common Language Runtime team, and I'm responsible for the garbage collector.
Awesome.
Cool.
All right.
So we kind of covered, as I said, things like dump heap and rentally commands last couple of episodes, which show the objects, particularly with dump heap minus stat, where you can see every... type.
Right.
What can we do to work out why those things exist still?
There's these things that we call roots. So there's what I call there's external roots, which are generally user visible, meaning that you created it yourself, or the framework that you're using created it on your behalf. There's also internal roots, which means because we're generational GC, that means if we're not doing a full collection, everything that stays in the older generation that you're not collecting will hold on to the objects in the younger generation live because, you know, because they're alive, that means their children need to all be alive.
So have roots changed as .NET has evolved?
Actually, we have added new kinds of roots. So the concept of some things being live because it's held on directly or indirectly by a root, that hasn't changed, right? You know, if you're holding on to some, if a root is pointing at an object directly or indirectly, that object will always have to stay alive. That's a guarantee that we have to make, right?
So when you say like a direct relationship, you mean something like maybe you've got, say, a Windows form, which has a title member.
Yeah.
Well, that's a string. So the form object is holding a reference to a string object that represents the title.
Exactly.
That's a direct relationship.
Yes.
So what's an indirect one?
Indirect means, you know, if you point to something, that something points to something else. That something else will have to be live, too. Because when GC does the first phase to find out which objects need to be live, it traverses the whole object graph. So what it does is we get a set of roots. These are internal roots from other components in the runtime, namely StackWalker, which knows about the roots on the stack, and then the handle table, which knows about the GC handles that you've created, things like that. So GC gets that information and says, okay, you've shown me what these roots are, and you've told me what objects these roots directly point at. So if I have a stack root, right, and I'll say it's a register on the stack, you know, ESP or ECX, right? So it says, well, okay, ECX is holding on to a managed object. So GC will take that managed object and says, okay, now I'm going to traverse the object graph that this object holds on to, which means every single object in that graph will be held live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So obviously there's a scale issue here, right? As more and more objects there are, the more traversal we have to do.
Right. So GC has this... way to indicate whether GC has already or is currently working on an object, which means that, you know, let's say in the server GC case, which we haven't really talked about, but most people probably know that server GC actually has multiple GC threads working parallel when it's doing the finding what objects are live phase, right? So if I have an object graph that it's held live by a different roots, right? So you could have a stack root, or I could create a GC handle that point to the same object, right? So if one thread actually gets to that object first, it would make an indication to say everybody else, you know, every other GC thread, you don't have to worry about this object anymore because I'm going to go and mark the complete object graph that this object holds onto.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So can you see this relationship between
objects? So we have this SOS command that was created specifically for this purpose. I'm going to do a little demo here. So this is sort of like the fragment test that we used last time. I just, you know, changed it a little bit. So I'm going to do all the same thing I did last time. So this is to load the CLR.dl. And let's see, now I'm going to load...
So what this did was, we went through this before, but the SXELD colon CLR says, break when we load a module called clr.dll. Mm-hmm. We did go. It broke in, which means at that point, load by works because it can find the module and then it can find sos.dll and go watch episode 14 from memory on SOS loading.
So now I'm setting the symbol path to the public Microsoft symbol server. Then I'm going to do a reload on clr.dll to reload the symbols because I wanted to show that after GC, if GC hasn't occurred, every object that you allocate will, of course, be live mm-hmm. on the heap, right? So I wanted to show after AGC, if objects are still live, then they must have been held on live by something, right? So to do that, this is a function I also mentioned in my MSDN article that I think is titled Investigating Managed Memory Issues.
So we'll link it. We'll put it in the thing.
So I'm going to do CLR, and I'm using server workstation GC. I'm going to do garbage collect generation. So this is sort of an entry point to the code when a GC is triggered.
Yeah. So we showed that last time.
Okay.
Or
cool.
Two times ago.
All right. So if I do, this is when the GC starts. So if I want to do when the GC finishes, I'm going to do a step out. So this is a caller. Alloc is a caller that for garbage collect generation.
So this is the person who called garbage collect.
Yeah.
GU is go up, which means go up one back out of the function that you're in.
Right. So now we have a heap that this is right after AGC. And as we can see, there are some objects in Gen 0 still. And let's see. There's about 600K worth of objects in Gen 0. We'll talk about why that is soon.
Cool.
So now if we want to see, what are these objects in Gen 0? So I'm going to do a dump heap on that. All right, so we see some free objects and there are some non-free objects in between. Okay. Now we have this SOS command called GC root, which mm-hmm. As the name suggests, shows you the roots. So I'm going to do a GC root on this object.
So the you specified a range in the heap, so it listed every object at the top and then gave you a summary at the bottom of
exactly.
of its class
yep.
type.
Right. So if we do a GC root on this object, which is about 76K or 75K, then we get the root. You can ignore the checksum thing. So it says RBP is holding on to this type, which holds on to a type called requests, mm-hmm. which holds on to this object and then eventually holds on to this byte array. So RBP, as a register, is a stack root. So what this is telling me is that when the last GC happened, the GC that we just stepped over, when it happened and it went and it asked the stack walker, what roots do you have for me from the stack? So mm-hmm. this is one of the roots that was reported by the stack walker.
So as soon as the function moves away and then doesn't point to the object anymore, mm-hmm. which might be a temporary variable or something,
right.
there'll be nothing left in the stack mm-hmm. showing evidence to it, whether mm-hmm. it be registers or where you are in the local stack. Mm-hmm. Next GC will come along, nobody holds it, and then those objects will disappear.
So next GC, it depends. Let's say RBP right now is holding onto an object in Gen 0, right? Because the dump heap I just did is for the Gen 0 range.
Yep.
So let's say this object's actually not in Gen 0 anymore after this GC, right? Let's say this object's actually in Gen 1. So next GC, if it happens to be a Gen 0 GC, then by definition, everything in Gen 1 will still be live.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, even though the stack walker is not going to report it to us, it's going to be live in Gen 1 just because we're not collecting Gen 1.
Okay.
So that's what I call an internal roots of the GC. So if you're not collecting the generation where the object is of interest to you in, that means it's going to be live.
Gotcha. But when Gen 1 collection comes along,
then
it will finally
be dead.
Die.
Yes.
So it'll be a couple of generations garbage collections away
right.
before it goes.
Unless it's a finalizable object, which yeah. it will get promoted again. And
okay.
Yeah. yeah. So yeah. Right. So that's that's about roots. I mentioned that we introduce new kinds of roots as the framework evolves. So for example, one of the roots that we introduced, and I believe this was in 4.0, it's called dependent handles. So it's a new type of GC handle. It's used in the conditional weak table class.
Mm-hmm.
So the conditional weak table class introduces this concept that says, I want to build a relationship between two objects. And that relationship says the second object would only be live if the first object is live. So the
this is weak pointers, or is it the same?
This is not weak. Weak pointers just means, you know, I'm actually not holding on to anything live. I'm just merely getting a way to refer to an object. This is something that says, you know, I have a relationship of a primary and secondary object. Mm-hmm. So unless a primary object is actually live, the secondary object will be considered dead. So when we do the GC, we would say, if we don't traverse the dependent handles, the second object could totally be considered dead. But when we're actually traversing the dependent handles, we discover like its primary object is actually live because pointed to by a dependent handle. Now we would need to make that object live too.
So if you had something like a circular relationship where A points to B, points to C, points to D, points mm-hmm. to D, F, and then back to A, mm-hmm. and then you, by itself, nothing's going to hold that, right? And,
right.
And it will just die because of
exactly.
lack of direction. But
right.
if some object out here mm-hmm. says, hey, I consider C to be the front of the list at the moment, because mm-hmm. say it's a cyclic buffer, mm-hmm. because that guy is pointing to C, mm-hmm. that keeps the whole thing alive.
Right.
So how would you see that relationship in the GC root? You just see the top node would be the
yes.
the holder?
Yes.
And then
right.
you'd see C, then you'd see D
yep.
and EF.
Yeah, right.
So what happens when GC root finds someone who's cyclic? It just stops at the cyclic point, or?
Well, it would, first of all, it would actually start from the roots. So like the ABCDE that in that cycle, mm-hmm. if it, because you know you said like there's nothing pointing to it except that one other object, right?
Yeah.
That one other object could be pointed to directly or indirectly by a root.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So without that root, then you know you wouldn't see anything.
It's like a global
live.
Variable's holding that guy.
Exactly.
Which is finally...
So if you say I want to do a GC root on C, it would just start traversing from the roots. So which means that you know I'm going to go from the root, you know, some sort of global root
yeah.
that point to this other object that points to A, B, and C.
So basically, there's only two things that really hold things alive. It's registered. Oh, sorry, two and a half things. There's registers and the stack around it,
mm-hmm.
the local variables.
Mm-hmm.
And globals, and really the only global an application has is the application itself,
mm-hmm.
which is defined as a global object.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that keeps your Windows form, your mm-hmm. titles, all those things mm-hmm. all alive.
There's also GC handles. As we mentioned, the dependent handles is one of the types.
Mm-hmm.
There's what people are perhaps a lot more familiar with, the you know weak handles, as you said, but that doesn't actually keep anything live. There's strong handles, which means you know I do want a way to hold on to that object so it doesn't go away while I'm referring to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also pinned handles, which is the kind of handles that would create fragmentation, as we'll get into in a bit.
Yeah.
And there's async pinned handles, which is sort of a special type of pinned handles that are exclusively used by I/O.
Mm-hmm.
So you know there's all sorts of GC handles. There's finalized queue, which means you know if we find a finalizable object dead, we actually need to remember that on the queue as we're running the finalizer for that object,
mm-hmm.
which means that object needs to be live, and that means GC will have to keep it live.
Cool.
Yeah. So should we talk a little bit about pinned handles?
And, definitely.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about fragmentation just because it's such a concern for people who use managed memory. Fragmentation, I feel like it's important to have a good understanding of what fragmentation means for different generations. Because normally when I hear people talk about fragmentation, they just say like, it looks like my heap is, you know, 30% fragmented. And to refresh the memory, fragmentation means the amount of space on the GC heap that's taken up by the free objects, right? Means that these objects actually don't store the data for you, so they're just spaced on the GC heap.
It's very analogous to a C++ fragmented heap.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
When we say, when somebody says, I have a GC heap that's 30% fragmented, it doesn't mean all that much if you don't actually break it down into generations. Because fragmentation in different generations can mean very different things. So as we just did the dump heap on Gen 0, and we see there's a bunch of free objects, right? So the free objects in Gen 0, they're not that bad. Because when we allocate, when the user says new some object, we would actually look through these free spaces on Gen 0, then we say, can we fit this object there or not? Mm-hmm. So if it fits the object, we would just use that space. We don't need to extend the Gen 0, right? So fragmentation there is useful. So I would say, you know, if you know that you have a bunch of I/O going or other purposes that made you pin a bunch of things, but you see much of your fragmentation actually stays in Gen 0, it's not nearly as bad as if they made it into Gen 2.
Yeah. So there's no real correlation between the C++ low fragmentation heap addition, is there, in CLI world? They don't really have
not
that concept.
Not really. We use very different algorithms. And, yeah, right. So another thing that people normally talk about fragmentation when they talk about managed heap is large object heap. So large object heap, I actually have another MSDN article that specifically explains this. Yes, we have, up until now, we haven't compacted large object heap. But when you have dead objects on a large object heap, they're coalesced into one big free object, right? Just like any other generations, which means it's not like as soon as you start allocating and start freeing things, the heap just gets bigger and bigger, right? We also try to use the space there as much as we can.
So if you allocate, say, 100 megabyte blocks, we'll take a big number, bang, 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 and A, B, and C are in there, and A and B are destroyed, you're not left with 200 megabyte regions, you're left with a 200 megabyte region because of the coalescence. Is that what you mean?
If A, B, and C are still alive, or
C is alive and A and B are dead now.
Okay.
So you wouldn't be left with these 100 megabyte holes.
Right.
You're left with a 200 megabyte hole because of the coalescence.
Yeah. So next time, if you're allocating a 100 megabyte object in there, then you would take the first 100K in that 200 megabyte.
Cool.
Yeah. So the point is, you know, you want to find out like what generation these fragmentation or free objects are actually in. That's very important. In GC, what we do is, you know, when we see you have pins, which means we can't move this object around, we actually would like to make it stay in Gen 0 so that you can use a free space in between the pins. Otherwise, we would end up in a situation where we keep extending the size of the heap, right? Size including the fragmentation. And people just see like, okay, my heap just keeps growing and growing, and the fragmentation ratio keeps getting bigger and bigger. That's not a situation that we want to be in. Of course, you know, there's a bunch of tuning decisions that we have to make, right? There's a lot of parameters. So it doesn't mean, you know, if you have pins, they're guaranteed to be left in Gen 0. Because sometimes we do want to promote them into Gen 1. But one of the concerns is, you know, like sometimes we do want to leave them in Gen 0, which makes your Gen 0 not empty after a GC.
So take a step back. So what actually makes a pinned object? What's the CLI command that you're running that makes it pinned so that the memory is unmovable and not defragmentable?
So from the user point of view, there's a few ways you can pin an object. There's a fix keyword in C++, where it says, you know, I'm going to pin this object. I'm doing fixed on, right? There's also GC pinned handles that you can create that specifically says, I'm creating a handle that points to this object and the type is pinned. So that would also pin an object. Sometimes the framework or the runtime itself would actually pin objects on your behalf. For example, you know, if we're doing an interop. So interop, you know, it also has to consider the performance and would make a decision to say, you know, whether when I'm marshaling parameters over, do I want to copy them? Do I want to pin them? So if it sees that pinning would actually be more performant, it would make those pinned. And what happens when it comes to GC is that when GC gets a roots reported to it, so let's say a stack walker is reporting the roots, it would actually say, for this specific root, pin it. So it passes a flag to GC that says, pin this object, and GC would then, you know, mark that object in some way to say, like, I'm not going to move it.
It's a flag that's representative of it.
Yes, right.
Cool.
I wanted to do a little bit of the investigations under debugger to see the pinned handles and all that, so you know what to do when you have fragmentation that could be caused by pinning. So using the same example that we're just in, there's another SOS command that's called GC handles. So this is a new format in 4.0, and it actually shows you the type So prior to 4.0, I think, either 4.0 or 4.5, we didn't actually show the type. We just showed, you know, stats of all objects are pointed to by GC
handles. And the type you mean is this weak, short, and
yes, exactly. Type. So if I'm only interested in pinning, I could say GC root type pinned, right? That would give me only the pinned handles.
Okay.
So as you can see, you know, I have a bunch of byte arrays, which these are pinned just by my code. So if I want to say, let's see how these objects are pinned.
So it's not surprising to see byte arrays, for example, for interrupt, because you tend to pass
exactly.
Those raw buffers.
Right, yeah. So if I do a GC root, it says it's a pinned handle. So it's the pinned handle in this case is a root that holds this object alive.
Yep.
Yeah. And then if I do, I don't actually have any I/O going on. I don't think. Let's see. What if I did an async pinned? So I don't have anything. So if you were doing, say, file I/O or network I/O, you would see a bunch of, like, say, overlapped structures are pinned because they will need to be pinned in order to interrupt with the native code for the.
Which is the overlay structure of like create file and read
exactly,
file.
Exactly right. Actually, another implication is people usually see the overlapped structures get pinned because they're pointed to directly by a pinned handle. But the overlap structure actually, when we ask for pinned roots, we actually get reported that the buffer that they refer to also gets pinned, right? So it's actually not only the overlap structure itself, it's the buffer, of course, that it uses to do the work will also get
it's
pinned.
It's every, roughly, it's when you transition to the C world, every point just becomes static.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's a bad word for it, but not pinned.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to cover about fragmentation and pinning.
I think we've covered GC to the max.
All right.
I think we're just up to the point where if you've got questions,
leave them in the show notes or email us at defragtools@microsoft.com and we'll get right back to you. Thanks for watching.
Have a good week.
Thank you. Bye.